When he was young, President George H.W. Bush got some advice from his mother, first about life and then about tennis. Don't brag and bend your knees when you volley. Bush's White House Chief of Staff, former New Hampshire Governor John H. Sununu, says Bush's reluctance to talk about himself has meant his presidency has been overlooked. Sununu's new book is an effort to change that. It's called The Quiet Man, and Governor Sununu joins me now to talk about it. Welcome to Weekend Edition.
Good to be on. Thanks for having me.
You said when you left the White House that you didn't want to write the tell-all memoir that people often do when they leave public life, and that President Bush himself wasn't a big fan of those kind of books either. So how did you decide now to write this book, and with his blessing?
Yeah, about a year and a half ago, October, I drove up to have lunch with him at Kennebunk. My wife and I go up once or twice a year when they're in Maine, and in the middle of lunch, I said, you know, Mr. President, I'm going to break a promise to you. And he kind of looked at me puzzled and said, what do you mean? And I said, I promised I wasn't going to write a book, but I think I ought to be writing a book telling everybody what you really accomplished. And he and Barbara Bush both enthusiastically said, go to it.
Now, how did the two of you first get to know each other?
I met him for the first time in 1980 when he was running against Ronald Reagan. And that was a year that Reagan won the nomination and the presidency and asked him to be vice president. A couple of years later, when I won the nomination for the Republican Party to be governor, and I called the vice president and asked him to come up and do a fundraiser for me, and he did, and we stayed close ever since.
You mentioned President Reagan and his run for the White House, and he's considered, you know, a very natural, enthusiastic campaigner. President Bush wasn't necessarily considered in that same camp. How do you describe him as a campaigner?
Well, you know, George Bush is one who focuses on performance and getting things done and really doesn't like to talk about himself. A lot of campaigning is talking about yourself. And so he became a reluctant campaigner, but in '88 he was a very good campaigner and he was very effective. But he had to be encouraged to do that. It was not a natural thing for him.
Did it help then to have surrogates such as yourself who were able to take some of the tougher roles, almost the bad cop role in a campaign?
That's what Time magazine called me when they put me on the cover, Bush's bad cop. Yes, I think it was part of the chemistry, if you will, between us, that he felt comfortable that I would make sure that people understood what he'd accomplished. And this time around, I felt I had to do the bragging for him. To a great extent, the book is me trying to make sure that the world gives George Herbert Walker Bush credit, not only for his foreign policy, but his domestic policy. He passed more domestic legislation than any president except Lyndon Johnson and Franklin Roosevelt.
Inside the White House at that time, you call it the Jell-O theory of leadership, and you say that was a big part of getting some of that legislation passed. Could you describe how things worked and then what your job as chief of staff was?
Well, the Jell-O theory is that everybody wants to put something into the pot, a chunk of fruit into the Jell-O, and that's okay. The president was happy with that, but once he decided where all those pieces were and let it all gel, everybody supported the president's position, and that's the way a White House should be. Active, aggressive, strong debate internally behind closed doors. But once the president decides, the team goes out and fulfills his agenda. And we had a White House that was very much consistent with that.
This is at a time when we have a Republican president and Democratic majorities in Congress. So there had to be at least some common ground to pass some of these pieces of legislation.
The Democrats, Tom Foley was the Speaker in the House, and he had 260 to 175 Republicans. In the Senate, it was George Mitchell, and he was running the Senate with 55-45. It took the president to invest a lot of personal time, meetings with Democratic leadership, and individual members of the House and Senate, both Republican and Democrat. I remember that on the budget issue, the Democratic chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Dan Rostenkowski, we had him down to the White House to meet with the president one-on-one about two dozen times as we were working out the details in the budget.
That is something that is characteristic of President Bush, those investing those personal relationships. Those served him well on the foreign policy stage as well. In a way, you have a parallel, too, because there's a story you tell about the 1988 primary in which your authority, and this is something that people who have lived in New Hampshire a long time will probably know better than some of us who have lived here shorter, about the low number license plates helping?
Ah, yes. When I became governor, I discovered that governors in New Hampshire traditionally have the prerogative of redistributing low-number license plates that come into the Division of Motor Vehicles. The actual legislative authority is with the director of DMV, but governors traditionally have been able to direct them. And when I became governor, I asked that they not be distributed for a while until I thought about where they might go. And as I say in the book, when George Bush was running against Bob Dole and we wanted a particular town chairman, I found that a low-digit license plate was a great tiebreaker when they were undecided.
Now, President Bush, in 4 years, was able to nominate two members of the U.S. Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas is still on the court today. And then David Souter of New Hampshire, whose time on the court has proven to be very controversial with conservatives.
More than controversial, I think the right word is a disappointment. I certainly have a half a chapter in there on the Souter appointment, but there's an associated reading that people who really want to put the whole thing in context. Warren Rudman wrote a book, and there's a big section in Warren's book talking about how he and David plotted not to communicate on issues, so that it appears to me what he was saying, David's real feelings on issues would not be known. David was appointed by a president who thought he was a conservative, and Souter became the most liberal member of the court.
This was no uneventful period of time. In addition to the Iraq War, you have legislation like the Americans with Disabilities Act. The debate on these Supreme Court nominees, especially in Thomas's case, was very contentious. There's a lot of big issues going on, the savings and loan crisis. And then there's an economic downturn, which hit New Hampshire fairly hard. So what was it like when President Bush was looking to win a second term in 1992, and how did it compare to 4 years before?
The president was a bit of a victim of the economic calendar. The downturn had started in about late 87, beginning of 88. It began to bite, particularly with the savings and loan problem, which the president tried to fix immediately. I think it was one of his first pieces of legislation sent up. The impact of that on the American real estate market was tremendous, and that kind of dragged the economy down. He put into place the not very popular at the time 1990 budget, which began to create growth, and the surpluses that showed up in the early 90s after he left. Actually, 1992 turned out to be a very strong economic year, the election year, but even though it was, a little over 4% growth, people didn't feel it until 93, 94. You know, these things have a lag getting into the impact in the economy. I had left the job of chief of staff and left the White House in March of 92. It was frustrating both for people inside the White House and me watching from outside, seeing the economic numbers come in strong, but not the public opinion of those economic numbers, public feeling about what was happening, give the president any election benefit.
There is a quote from President Bush saying essentially that if he gets a good shake from history, great. If not, he said something like, I'll be in heaven, and so I'm not going to worry too much about it.
And that's his attitude. He did his best. He achieved most of his domestic agenda. There were a couple of things he wanted to continue doing in the second term, particularly welfare reform and a little bit of health care reform on the domestic side. But on the foreign policy side, he wanted to enhance the relationship with his then Russia, and it started as the Soviet Union and now helped dwindle it down to Russia. And certainly what he had started at Madrid in bringing the Israelis and Palestinians together, he was going to try and really address with the credibility he got from the Middle East partners in our coalition kicking Saddam out of Iraq. He was, I think, going to try and build on that trust to deal with the ever elusive Palestinian-Israeli peace process.
Since you mentioned you still see the president, one thing that you both have in your lives is that you each have children who have, like you, gone into politics and government. Do you ever compare notes about what that's like, being the father of those who are still in office?
You know, there was a time when I had a son running for the Senate and the president had a son running for president. And we used to jokingly lament that we would sit by the phone waiting for a call, asking for advice, and it usually never came.
Governor Sununu, it's been great talking with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
John H. Sununu served 3 terms as New Hampshire governor before serving as chief of staff to President George H.W. Bush. His new book is called The Quiet Man. You'll find information about several of his upcoming appearances at New Hampshire bookstores at nhpr.org.